and it's this big black A8 Audi. And the car whizzes by him, comes to a stop, goes in reverse, comes right back to where the shepherd is standing. Tinted window goes down, and this young guy with slick hair looks at him, takes off his sunglasses, looks around, and says, "Sir, you're a shepherd." Man looks at him and says, yeah. "Well," says, "well, I'll make you a deal. If I can guess how many sheep are out here, will you let me take one?" Man looks at him, looks at the car, looks around at his sheep, goes around to the front, notices it's a mustard color license plate with a blue strip across it, a New Yorker, has a fancy license plate. Comes back around and says, "No, I'll humor you, yeah, go ahead." Well, right away, the young man takes out his laptop, logs on, uses his phone, connects to the internet, Google Earths the area. He Googles size of sheep, plugs in a few more calculations, looks outside, more calculations. The shepherd is just sitting there looking around. The kid presses a button. He's got a printer right on his dashboard. About 5 seconds later, a piece of paper comes out, looks at it, looks at the shepherd in delight, says, "Well, I calculate you have 749 sheep out there." Shepherd looks at him and says, "Well, I'll be gone. Yeah. I've got 749 sheep out there. Go ahead and pick one." Guy gets out of the car, looks around, goes around, picks one, grabs one, throws it in the back of the A8, jumps back in his car. Just as he's about to leave, the shepherd says, "Now hold on there, son. Would you humor me now?" He goes, "Yeah. If I can guess what you do, will you give me my animal back?" He says, "Yeah. Yeah, I bet you're a consultant." Kid looks at him and says, "Yeah, how'd you know?" "Well, you come whizzing down here in this fancy car, all these fancy gadgets, all these fancy machines. You don't know a thing about me. You didn't ask me anything. And you tell me something I already know. Yeah. Now give me my bloody dog back." So if you're a consultant, I'm sure you'll appreciate that. And if you're from Maine.
George is a serial entrepreneur. He spent the first 25 years starting and growing a registered investment advisory firm. It became one of the largest offices by revenue in the country. Having expanded the firm both organically and through acquisitions, he then sold the practice. Then George went to the next chapter in his life. He started a company called ROI Cubed. Its focus is helping owners grow revenue while preparing for ownership transition. This case that we're dealing with is actually a real case that George is working on right now. George is a graduate from Tufts University with a BA in economics and an MBA from Bentley University. Now, for purposes of this discussion, I'm going to be Rob, and you're going to be the board. And I'm going to say that because this is so, I'm so emotionally wrought about this, I don't think I can run this meeting impartially. So I've hired George here to run the meeting. But I want to listen to what you all have to say. Okay.
Great. So you've all had a chance to read it. Thank you for having me here. By the way, I feel your pain in this distinguished group here. I was ready to walk out the door, but then you described yourself, so I decided to stay. Thank you for having me, and hopefully this case at least provokes some thinking and some discussion, and we'll see what conclusions the board and recommendations the board may suggest to Rob here, to Larry. Who would like to start? What are some of the points, some of the questions? What are some of the feelings that you get when you read this? Is this a thought-provoking enough case, or is this just a simple case? We know exactly what he did, and out away we go.
Well, one of my first thoughts is that it says that he has a buy-sell agreement. and we don't know what it says.
Correct.
So, I mean, I think that's an important consideration to try to understand what we need to already.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit. I'm sorry?
No, given what he's confronted with now.
Sure, of course. What I added here in the case is that the buy-sell had never been funded, per se. What I was trying to imply is that the buy-sell agreement also didn't address any issues of early exit, any sort of buyout issues. For those of you, I'm sure everybody is familiar with a buy-sell agreement. Unfortunately, so often, buy-sell agreements lack specifics. Lack specifics on how a business is going to be valued at the time of exit, whatever that trigger point might be. They lack specifics on how it's going to be funded, and many people unfortunately look away from the life insurance aspect of funding buy-sell agreements, especially early on when they form a business. Unfortunately, this buy-sell agreement really didn't have much in it, and it had never been funded. One of the key aspects of this buy-sell agreement was the fact that it completely missed one of the trigger points, and that is, what if I as a business partner wants to leave early or has to leave early? Many buy-sell agreements also lack issues that pertain to how do we address a divorce or how do we address disability. So that's a key aspect to the case. Yes.
I mean, clearly you want to find out what the shareholders want. Okay, mm-hmm. You don't have 10,000 of them, you have three. And even if you had a buy-sell agreement, it was written years ago, you'd still want to find out what they really are looking for.
Sure.
Okay, so I'd want to spend some time as a board member, because that's your job, is to look out for the best interest of the shareholders, understand what they all want, and it's not clear necessarily that they all have the same objectives.
Sure. So you started your comments, and I appreciate your comments. We only have three shareholders. We don't have hundreds of shareholders. Does that make it easier or harder?
Well, it's easier to find out what they want. Yeah. Arguably, you only have to talk to three as opposed to a large number. It might be substantially harder.
Absolutely. And in this case, it did become harder for several reasons. One was there was an illness. Two, there was a family relationship that existed between Eva and Bill, and their desires and their needs. Three, they outnumbered. They have the majority interest in the company, so they can easily do whatever they wanted. What was my other thought regarding having three shareholders? It was the family. It was the percentage, and there was the illness, of course. So it did start out a little, put it this way, Rob actually at the time was shaken up because all of those issues went through his mind.
What's the, in terms of the ISO certification, it looks like their industries, people are getting certified.
Yes.
It looks like, you know, they've been sort of at the same revenue number for quite a while. Mm-hmm. The question is whether they're going to just continue to be flat, or whether do they really have to be ISO certified? And if they're not, is that going to make this company less valuable? Or do they need to get rid of it now while they're not certified, or someone will take it to the next level?
Exactly. Now, and again, I don't know how you want to do this because you are Rob. Do you want to address the ISO certification, or would you like me to address it?
Yeah, I'm too,
okay.
I'm too upset. I think you're doing
it. You do your consultant.
Fair enough. So
I got to focus on getting the dog out of my car.
Yeah. So yes, put it this way: in the industry, in the engineering, and the product that they design, not being ISO certified is a detriment. Being certified is almost an expectation. So I'm sure people that have been in manufacturing, they're familiar with what ISO is. I just put a little description in there. But just as this was happening, they had made the decision that in order to get to that next level, in order to reach certain markets that they weren't reaching, they wanted to start looking at the ISO certification. And that's about at the point that I came in. I actually met them at through an ISO Manufacturers Association conference.
Yeah, did you say this was an ESOP? I think you did, or because I presume at some point it makes sense to get a valuation of the business, that somebody throwing out a number is not really what you want to bank on, and ESOPs generally do have valuations done every year and come up with some stock price or some range as to what this company might be worth, looking not just at its financials but at comparables, like anybody selling a house or a piece of property. So at some point I think that should be an agenda item.
Absolutely. So that was my first question. What are some of the first steps that they ought to consider? And the gentleman, I forget your name.
Ken,
pardon me. So Ken suggests, asks if it's an ESOP company. Let's talk a little bit about ESOP. What is an ESOP?
An ESOP is an employee stock owned plan, I think, where either the employees own 100% or something less than that of the company. It's usually a very attractive exit strategy for an owner, but the employees own all of the shares. If it's 100%, okay, let's just make it simple, it doesn't have to be. So you have trustees that have to look out for all of the shareholders, and you have a board, quite frankly, that has to look out for the shareholders. But they have to get their stock price valued every year, the company valued every year. Most companies don't do that on a regular basis, but a company with that structure, I believe, gets it valued every year, so you have an idea as to what the company's worth, as opposed to somebody just throwing out a number, X times EBITDA or Y times sales or something like that.
Sure.
It may not be realistic. Professionals do this, firms do this, there are many different ways. We can discuss that at another time, but you at least want to put on the table getting a valuation if they don't already have one. And
right.
If they had one, I would think throwing out a number like that would be more or less not terribly relevant, in that you'd see, well, what is the valuation firm say we're worth? Shares times the stock price is the enterprise value.
Absolutely. So that was perfect, because that's exactly it. Now you suggested getting an valuation if they're an ESOP. You sort of put the two together in the same sentence. But isn't it true that you're at a situation here, you're at a crossroad here, certain buyouts may have to happen, irrespective of this ESOP concept? Doesn't it just make sense to know what the value of your company is?
Valuation
would probably be something you would want to suggest to Rob immediately.
I was suggesting that if it's an ESOP, they probably already have it, okay?
Right.
If they don't have it, they should get it. They're not at ease up, they should get it. It's
right.
Got to be on the table, given the things that we're talking about.
Sure.
Ken, given the fact that they have a buyout agreement, a buy-sell agreement, as opposed to an ESOP agreement, we can assume it's not an ESOP, that you've got three owners that have equal shares with a loosely worded document about how they exchange their particular value.
Correct. I'm sorry. I thought George had said something earlier that led me to believe it might have been an ESOP. But you're right. There are three shareholders, so it is. It's they need a valuation.
Points. Both points very well taken.
Is that an option after the evaluation is done? Is that an option to set up? I mean, they say they have a lot of bright engineers. They worry about who can lead them. But is it an option to become an ESOP at any time during the structural life of the company?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Let's hold on to that. Yep.
I was going to go back to the issue that was raised by my fellow board member, Mindy, on ISIL. And I'd like to ask the other board members how many have had experience with an ISO certification. Three, four, five.
Which certification specifically?
Pretty old 9000.
Okay.
We had some business continuity requirements in one of our contracts. So it was customer driven, which is one place I will eventually go with what do these customer contracts say you're actually required to do.
Sure.
And if the industry is saying that this is becoming more and more important, then like in software, we're seeing that more and more now in different regions, EMEA and APAC particularly, where they're starting to require certain things. So that would be contractually, what do we have to do? And then what's the nice to have that we would have to do?
Excellent points. Mary Ann, what experience, which industry?
This is healthcare, so.
Oh, in healthcare, so that's a completely different, but along the same lines?
Manufacturing and engineering.
So you're familiar with 9001:2015.
Yes.
So what's the premise of 9001:2015? What did 2015 do and sort of change from the 2008 certification?
Well, let me answer this a little more broadly. The basis of ISO 9000 is that it doesn't, in and of itself, improve quality. What it does is it documents your processes and it sets the procedures by which every time you fail to meet one of your standards, that there is a process for addressing that.
You and say what you do and you do what you say.
Exactly.
Precisely. And I'm sharing my experience. It's relatively intensive to document your processes because a lot of things were heretofore handled informally or through tribal knowledge. And once you go through the process, everything is captured. And that takes a bit of time.
The real question to value against the perceived benefits of having an ISO certification is what is the people, money, and time cost doing that so the decision can be weighed against it. I think somebody was pointing that they don't seem to have hurt sales so far.
The other issue, Roger, that you touch on is while the case doesn't say it, that any of the existing customers would leave if they didn't get ISO, given that they have some defense customers, ISO is an alternative to mil-spec. And so one would expect that over time, increasingly, defense contractors would look for a company like this.
It would become a criteria or a filter.
But it doesn't say that there's a gun to their head today.
Not yet. Somebody else?
What I was going to say is, in my experience with representing some companies that where our customers are requiring us to, you know, make a representation that we are in fact we comply with ISO blah blah, and it's a real issue because it's so expensive and it just takes so much time.
Absolutely.
And in certain industries, what I've now learned is that it doesn't matter that time is you have to do it in order to get to the next level.
Any more comments regarding ISO?
Yeah, so in this fact pattern too, not only is it going to be a heavy lift, but with regard to this, if all three of them were totally involved 100% now, but with two of them unable to participate fully in the business now, and that this ISO certification says it emphasizes leadership engagement, I see it maybe being able to get this.
Right. So, ISO 2015 differs from 2008 on a very, very high level, whereas 2008 was more of a quality management system, 2015 became more of a business management system. So it integrated the entire company across every sector, which is why we had here, I think on the second page I put planning, leadership, people, operations, sales, marketing, finance, and legal. So ISO pretty much takes a look at all but finance and legal, less so with finance and legal, and asks how is every department addressing what the corporate vision is. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the vision. I mean, let's talk a little bit, and I'll just tell you another fact pattern which I forgot to put in here. They didn't have any sort of a business plan. They had nothing. I mean, they didn't have a proper buy-sell agreement. They didn't have a proper business plan in place either. This sort of all culminated at the same time, and it really forced Rob to take a look at his business and to think of his own desires and his own goals and needs. It put a lot of things on the table at the same time. But interestingly enough, they all sort of intersected and one played off the other. Now, the fat pattern I made a little bit more aggressive. It wasn't stage four prostate cancer. It was prostate cancer, but it wasn't stage four. I just wanted to show the urgency that, you know, this particular owner had to make some urgent decisions. The decisions that he did eventually make took time. Implementing an ESOP, if that's the direction, you know, the board were to suggest, or implementing ISO, aren't things that you can do overnight. It's a very long, drawn out process that could take up to 6 to 8 months. But let's just keep going in terms of the fact pattern. I don't want to give anything away.
My guess would be, right, if two-thirds of your shareholders want out,
yep,
it's nice to have thought I wanted to do ISO next.
Yep.
But you're done on that point for a while, right?
And, sure.
And if these guys are really committed to being gone, the only thing that will keep them in the game is if, for instance, not doing ISO is a long-term detriment to us financing you out of here. Because on a company that earns $2.5 million a year, to come up with $10 or $12 million is like, you don't do this and have that happen, right? So you either sell it, and everyone's out, or you work with us and you make those investments that allow probably for an increase in earnings so I can buy you out with a note over time or however you want to do it. But I almost didn't quite get the connection with ISO to the demand that just got put on the table, mm-hmm. right? Because it's like,
seems
throw all the plans out the window.
It seems that the ISO situation and the transition of ownership really are very separate problems. Okay. And the thing that makes them look somewhat connected is you put it towards the urgency factor. The other thing that strikes me as rather interesting is the business is whatever, 25-year-old business of the size that it is. No debt, mm-hmm. own the building outright.
Yeah.
That implies no banking relationships. And the reason that strikes me as a somewhat significant factor here is, again, this sense of urgency. The one partner who's 80 years old, well, none of us is going to live forever. So even apart from, the family, situation with the children. She's 80 years old. And then you've got the health situation with Bill. Ryan was observing the issue with two of the three partners can't be engaged with the ISO, but they're not operating partners of the business anyhow. One is kind of the administrative person, one is the financial person, only one of the three is really an operating figure who is the one who wants to continue the involvement with the business, mm-hmm. and whose interest it would be, therefore, to go through the ISO process. So that's why it seems that there are some disconnects here that would suggest that we have some separate problems. We can restructure how we're thinking about the situation. And think about exactly how the transition might occur. It doesn't have to be, here's your check, Bill, and here's your check,
Eva.
Chow. It doesn't have to be like that at all. Mm-hmm. What they need is liquidity, mm-hmm. and if the firm has any problem, it does seem to be a liquidity problem. That was kind of suggested on the first page of the case. And so that's what banks are for. Taking well-run, good asset businesses and providing some liquidity.
Right. right? I'll address that as we go. Lynn, comments?
I've dealt with a million other certifications, but not ISO. Is the expense mainly sweat equity and time, or is it consultants and fees? You know, what's the nature of the of expense to do ISO in a small enterprise like this?
Sure, it's definitely sweat equity or sweat expense, if you will. Everybody is involved at every single level. The consultants that come in and the certifiers are really small dollars. I mean, we're not talking anything major, so cash flow can easily cover that. But it is a time commitment, and again, it's a lack of focus, if you will.
80 internal, right. 20 outside.
Okay.
Mindy. Just another point on
that. Sorry. She was raising her hand.
One of the things that I don't know if it's in here, are there any senior people who might be interested in buying? Mm-hmm. But that's one way to think about sort of getting some new people into shareholder roles and having them buy out these mm-hmm. people over time. That may be one way of looking.
Okay, so I'm gonna hone in on that right after that this question by Ken.
Just want to mention we've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Right, so quickly, the ISO is an interesting discussion, but we don't know how much this is holding them back. First of all, we don't know how much it's going to cost, so nobody's put out a number. We don't know how long it's going to take.
Right.
And we don't know how much it's holding them back. They've grown 11% from 2013 to 2015. That may not be terrible in this kind of a business. Mm-hmm. Maybe having a better sales VP would do more for them in terms of top-line revenue growth mm-hmm. than an ISO certification. We don't really know the competitive landscape.
Sure.
So while it may be important to Rob, as a board, I think you have to assess, is that number one on the list if we're going to invest money? Would that be the investment? Again, different from an exit strategy, an 80-year-old woman who all of a sudden wakes up, you know, why wasn't there an exit strategy plan when she was 60, mm-hmm. that's a whole other set of issues.
Absolutely.
A little late to start saying, what's my exit strategy in a crisis as opposed to when cooler heads are prevailing years ago?
Sure. Mary, you each had it.
I just wanted to say that I thought that the ISO certification probably had relevance in the valuation of the company, because if they sold it today, it would be worth a lot less than if they sold it after certification. So that's got to be on Rob's mind too, mm-hmm. as far as valuation.
You know, sometimes I look at issues from when my business hat on, and sometimes I look at the issues with my psychologist hat on. This seems to be pure psychology. And really, it's about talking with the three owners separately and individually. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, what you call an existential moment. And they're three owners, so that's actually good news, because three is a better number than a million. And the issue is, where do we want to go? Because there are mm-hmm. two directions. The first direction is, you know, deal with the urgency of the moment and the panic that you legitimately feel and is appropriate for the situation. And let's sell this company for whatever. But understand that if we go that route, this is a public fire sale. It will be perceived as a public fire sale. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose some good employees, and you're not going to get what it's worth. But that is one option. The other option is, we're going to have to suck it up. We're going to have to do the ISO thing, increase the value, and then as we're increasing the value, then we're going to put the company on the market for a higher value. And you, as the owners, there's only two options, and those are the only two options. And I as Rob have got to say, you know, I will do, you know, the three of us, you know, whatever two-thirds of us want to do, that's what's going to be done.
Right.
But ultimately, it's an existential issue of what do we want to do as owners. And
okay, and yeah. to all well said, Larry.
how do we, as board members, help you to fulfill your charge to the other two owners?
I think my role as Rob is to have that meeting, maybe with you present, because I brought you in as the outside impartial. You're not as emotionally involved in this.
Consultant with the glasses and the AA.
But two-thirds of the owners have got to make a decision about this. And then once we make a decision, there's a whole bunch of tactical things that we, as the owners, we've certainly proven beyond a shadow of a doubt we don't know what we're doing. In terms of buying, selling, setting up agreements, so that's where we're going to need you. But the owners have got to deal with the existential issue about where do we go from here. You can't help with that.
And the current ownership takes responsibility for having unfunded agreements, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a nice, I guess, something in the drawer, but we kind of crossed that a long time ago. It's a point, it's a fact, but we did nothing about it. We didn't make it real. We are stuck right now, and it's kind of funny. Just 3 or 4 or 5 hours ago, I was in a meeting where it was almost the reverse of this, and. The Florida Mexico company, $16 million in sales. I'm talking with the owner at his place down in Jamestown, and he wants to bring in one of his four children into the business, who he thinks will do a great job. And the business might be worth $30 million today, hypothetically, what the kid grows it to 90. And I said, and you drop dead. I said, all four of your children are gonna get the equal shares. He goes, absolutely. I said, okay, time out, right? What about the kid who took you from 30, doesn't he own all that? And the other sibling just gets 7.5? And he hadn't thought it through that way, right? But this is a case where the minority guy is gonna maybe get hosed out of the company. He's not ready to leave yet. Mm-hmm. And you can see this situation maybe over 20 years, and one kid saying, man, I busted my ass here. And we're all rich, I get that. But my three siblings are free riders. Do their future spouses take issues with that? Do their children take issue with that? You know, you don't know how this develops, but when I read this, it was like, oh gosh, I did this math just 3, 4, 5 hours ago.
So as board, do we then suggest one of the steps is for hiring a psychologist or somebody to help with the
do you know anybody?
Not a good one. I got psychologist, but not a good one.
Talking about, you know, two of them together in one. And their needs actually may be very different, just because they're mother and son. There's different circumstances, and I wouldn't assume that they're a block vote. I also think that because of their relationship, there may be some guilt and, you know, maybe with Eva, like, I really need to do what my son wants to do, but I'm looking for Eva to take care of herself, you know, still late. So I think that one thing the board could suggest is that there is someone that talks to them, but it should be individually, mm-hmm. and really in a very private manner, where they can process and say what their real goals and aspirations are, and then bring those facts to the table. Because if you treat Eva and the mother and the son as a unit, you're going to get a different answer than if you treated them separately.
Absolutely, and those are excellent points. to a certain degree, we did have those conversations, by the way. On a separate individual basis, and then as a group. Unfortunately, that's where it started to become a little combative, and we probably did need the help of a psychologist, but eventually the solution satisfied everybody, which I'll get to in just a minute. I know there's some more comments, and then I have a couple more questions.
Well, there's a lot of hard questions in here, but one that seems a little bit easier in terms of just an action that could support other multiple outcomes might be the process of starting to bring in a new executive who could grow into becoming a future CEO, because just like Marianne mentioned, with the value of the business being a lot higher with ISO certification than mm-hmm. without, I would think that the business would be a lot more valuable with an in-place, high-quality management team that would be there for the long term
right.
than a buyer that might come in and that was the eventual outcome with no management team in
sure.
that situation.
I actually see four options on the table.
Okay.
So I agree that you could do a fire sale as option one. I agree that they could stick with it as option two. A third scenario could be
one of the folks get bought out and the other two put in investment and tap into the fact that there's no debt in the company to add additional funding, and then the other two can sell out later at a much higher value. And then the fourth option is you bring an investor in to help capitalize you as the other partner or partners are looking to exit. And so you don't have to sell it at all and just bring in, you know, whether it's angel funding or private equity funding or something to come in to help get to the next level. You show them the business plan, you know, help us to get to ISO readiness and go down that path.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Do you know anybody? Katahdin, ring a bell? I'm very familiar with
the issue with the company I was alluding to that I was chatting with, you know, they're in the construction business and they have a clean balance sheet and that business booms and it crashes, right? And gosh, wouldn't you hate to be the great partner who did right by his former buddies and bought him out and took on the debt load and then bang, right? You know, the economy goes to hell in a handbasket quick and you don't have cash flow and now the bank owns what you have and you're done.
Yeah, just to put a fifth option on the table where you could get, if the employees had any interest in buying a piece of the company. Mm-hmm. Certainly there are some really good tax advantages both for the owner, the company I'm on the board of, the owner sold it mm-hmm. to the employees. It became an S corp and the profits obviously go into the company and not into the IRS. So there are a lot of things to look at.
At 2 minutes of six. At 2 minutes of six, you're pretty much going down that path. Yes, absolutely. So let me just for the purpose of time, yeah. Let me tell you what was done. Actually, I was brought in to do a presentation to the board members. I had already spoken to Eva and Bill and Rob about this. We had already suggested that that this was just one avenue, but the avenue that we were going to recommend to the five board members that were there, five plus the three of them. Valuation was very important. One of the concerns that we had in doing a full valuation at the beginning is that you're setting some sort of a price. It's going to be a valuation that at least, you know, if we try to go to market with it, the valuation is only as good as the number that we have that day, number one. Number two, we may not be able to get enough through the ISO certification. And number three, if we do go to market, who's going to buy this company that doesn't even have a business plan? I mean, there was absolutely no business plan. Things were done on the back of an envelope kind of a thing. And that was one of the reasons why they wanted to go down ISO. They wanted to clean up everything and document everything. So the suggestion that we made is that we're going to consider an ESOP for the following reasons. They're an S corporation right now. We can convert to a C corporation immediately with absolutely no problems. And then sell the company, sell the two shareholders' shares, the 67%, to the ESOP. Talking about a banking relationship, they did have a banking relationship, but we then called in a banking company that specializes in ESOP loans, and we did a feasibility study with them. And we figured out that we could actually probably cash them out 100%. If we weren't able to cash both of them out at the same time, at the very least, we'd be able to cash out Bill and have him retired. We suggested that Rob doesn't cash out right now, nor did he want to cash out at this point in time. In order for us to maximize the valuation, number one, we probably should have had ISO certification. It probably should have been done in the past. Evaluator is going to look at not just, you know, from a numbers point of view. If they're going to look at the income approach, they're not going to just look at historicals. They're going to project into the future. They're going to project into the future and figure out that if you're ISO certified, you stand a better chance of growing your revenues, blah, blah, blah. It's all going to have an impact. Look at the market approach. Companies very similar to them were ISO certified. So again, the ISO certification was a very, very important certification. But how did we do that and how did we start it all off? We actually did a business assessment and we put together a business plan for them. We did a business assessment that looked at planning, looked at leadership, looked at people, looked at operations, looked at legal, looked at finance. And we showed them that by starting to put a plan together and focusing in on each category, what the value is today and what the value could be. We didn't want to bring in the ESOP valuator before we did that, before we implemented all of that, because we wanted to maximize that value as much as possible. The business plan started with a vision. You know, we put together the vision. I don't know, has anybody heard of the acronym VMOSTA, V-M-O-S-T-A? It's really the way that I explain the business plan and the process. And interestingly enough, it corresponds with ISO requirements, if you will. It parallels a lot of their requirements. V-M-O-S-T-A, and that is start with your vision, describe your mission, two entirely different things, as we know. Then fan out in a flowchart into your objectives, into your strategies, into your tactics, and into your actions. So every department manager was given an exercise to, number one, come out with what they see the company's vision is, and then what the mission is, what their objectives are in each of their departments, and so forth and so on. So we basically put together this flowchart that all combined every department into the common vision, long story short. It addressed ISO. It brought the valuation up by about 35% from the original valuation that we had done, a very high level valuation. We implemented the ESOP. We decided to implement the ESOP and buy both Mother and Bill out. We described and integrated the ESOP into the employees. Now, this was done in 2016, and it's been about a year now that the ESOP has been in place. Valuation has to be done every year to keep up with what their current numbers are. It's by law, an ESOP requires you, just like your 401k plan, you receive statements, you have to receive a statement of value of the ESOP plan once a year. And the revenues increased by about 40% over the course of 1 year, despite the fact that we had to replace the CFO and there was all this commotion. They got certified on ISO within about 90 days. It was the fastest certification that anybody had ever seen.
Wow.
Because that entire business assessment was basically laid out in front of the certifying company and gone through. It was like a 200-page assessment, and they just basically followed the outline that we had drawn up for them, and they passed their ISO certification. And at the end of the day, Bill is still living. But he's happily retired, and Eva is taking care of him.
That's great.
So.
I love stories with happy endings.
So how long post-diagnosis is he?
I'm sorry?
How long post-diagnosis is he now?
So he's about, this was 2015, so it's 2 years now. Yeah.
Any questions about this case?
Well, George, I'm just curious about the absence of the ISO certification. I think you mentioned that key competitors are ISO certified.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that the kind of organizations who are their principal clients are the kind of organizations that would expect a key vendor to have this. So what's going on there? And I guess the other thing that I'm wondering is if the ISO certification would be material to ramping up growth of the enterprise, isn't it kind of interesting that hasn't been a perceived need of either some of the senior employees or kind of the leadership team or this group that's serving as the board of directors?
Right.
This flat trajectory. I assume that the trajectory was kind of flat because you're talking 2013 through 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things were flat in that period. But you're suggesting that no, it's flat because they could have done more with the value of the enterprise.
Right. So to address the first question, the type of technology that they produce is very unique. In fact, that was one of the problems in trying to do evaluation, because there really weren't any comps out there, comparable companies. The closest that you come to are companies out of China, and the technology that they do is always behind their technology. And to briefly describe what the technology is, it's a vibration measurement for CNC machines that measures way before something like a drill bit is worn down. It actually alerts the user that the drill bit has gone awry. Change the drill bit now. Don't wait until your ball bearings have been produced for Pratt & Whitney, and Pratt & Whitney is one of their when are their customers, for until the ball bearing has been produced and you throw it on a jet and you realize that the engine has gone bad. So long story short is they really have a lock in this technology. So the ISO certification really hadn't come into play per se, because they were flying under the radar. I mean, the type of technology that they were that they're producing is very, very unique. All of their sales were built on relationships. You know, the two owners actually had very good relationships with all their customers. So it was kind of just something like, yeah. It was one of those nagging things. Yeah, we'll get to it at some point in time. Kind of like the buy sell. Yeah. We'll address it at some point. And it just, you know, every year you're at least, you know, it's a lifestyle business. Up until now, you're fulfilling your lifestyle. So why change things? There's no real burning fire, if you will. This kind of opened up their eyes. And what was the second part of the question or the comments that you made?
Why don't they have an internal sense of need of accelerating the growth of the business?
Again, it's tied into the lifestyle approach. And many small businesses, unfortunately, don't have that fire lit under them. They're paying their bills, they're able to afford their two homes and their boat and so forth and so on. So nobody had ever, up until that point in time, really sat them down and said, you have a very valuable, asset here. Most of your wealth is tied into that asset.
Like some of the key employees.
Right.
Right. I mean, isn't it rather interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is so content.
Yeah.
I guess what I was
understanding. I guess they have a high, what's it called, glass something or other?
Glass ceiling.
Hmm?
A high glass ceiling.
The employee rating.
Oh, Glassdoor?
Yeah, they must have a phenomenally high Glassdoor rating.
Oh, a Glassdoor rating. No,
people know the problem. Like, down you go in the hierarchy, but it's bubbling it up.
We're going to have to stop at this point. I do want to thank George very much. Excellent voice. Next month we're going to have something a little bit different. Most of the time, for those of you who are new here, most of the time this is exactly what we do. We will have a case, usually this length, and then we discuss the case, and that's how we do it. Next month is going to be a little bit different. We are going to have a program only focusing on how to get on boards of public companies. Our moderator is an expert on how to do that. That's Ellen Richstone, for those of you who know Ellen. She's got more public companies than I've got socks. And she is really